Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, a reminder now, keep your messages coming. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. You can also speak to Ciara on the phone on 045 898 999. Just another quick message coming in. A couple there, I see. Hi, Clem. Could have COVID-riddled Newbridge. COVID-riddled Newbridge. I know, let's be kind now, in regards to them or whatever else. There is a very high rate, and that is probably contributing. The question, of course, it begs is why? What's going on that Newbridge should have such a high rate in the 400s and stuff like that? I don't know. Maybe if anybody is scientific now, rather than speculative stuff, that won't particularly help at all. Speaking anyway of, we were talking about salubrious islands and marvellous Maynooth and nice Newbridge and everywhere else. We can, with our virtual history walk today, is with Liam Kenny, and it's going to take us around marvellous Maynooth in terms of that. Now, much focus has been placed on many Irish people from Kildare living and working abroad who've been unable to return home for the past year. This is due to the pandemic. Many of us are unaware, we're told, of the engagement and support that is in place already for our friends and relatives abroad. Certainly I would be surprised about that anyway, both for when they're away and for when they return to live here. Minister for Overseas Development, Aid and Diaspora Colin Brophy recently launched a new diaspora strategy. It sets out what the government will do over the next 5 years to support and engage with our diaspora communities around the world, including promoting opportunities by the next generation of the diaspora to work and study in Ireland. And it takes a broad and inclusive definition of the diaspora, reflecting the diversity of the global Irish community today. Now, we're waiting to hear from said minister, who was supposed to be joining us in the last couple of minutes. The report is called Ireland's Diaspora Strategy 2020 to 2025, and it opens by saying, quoting Oaktron here and Michael D. Higgins, "Our diaspora is one of Ireland's greatest resources through the contribution our people make to the nations they migrate to, through the bonds they forge with the people of those countries. Our migrants have allowed Ireland to have global connections far beyond our size." Now, Global Ireland's Diaspora Strategy for 2025, it says Ireland takes a broad and inclusive definition of the Irish diaspora, one that reflects the rich diversity of our global community. Interesting indeed. It goes on then to talk about the objectives for this kind of thing. Well, let's find out what kind of objectives we're talking about, because it says our people, Ireland will ensure that the welfare of the Irish abroad remains at the heart of the diaspora's support. Now, in regards to that, of course, many people would say, well, that's not what has quite happened in the past, where in particular we have engaged with some of those who are members of the diaspora in the United Kingdom and who feel that they have been ignored by the government over years. Ireland will ensure that the welfare of the Irish abroad remains at the heart of our diaspora's support, talking about the welfare of them and supporting the Irish living abroad in this particular age and whatever else this is all about. Now, it says we will expand the honorary consul network in regions with significant Irish people living in communities abroad. We will support increased engagement between Ireland's network of overseas missions and the Irish abroad. We'll work with organisations that provide vital assistance to Irish citizens in distress abroad, in line with Ireland's consul strategy. And indeed, we'll see how that goes. And it talks about celebrating our diverse diaspora. It says our diaspora is increasingly multicultural, in which Irish identity can be one element of an individual's broader cultural background. Our engagement with the diaspora must be responsible to the evolving needs and continue to promote an open and inclusive approach to diaspora engagement. Now, the cynics might be replying and saying, well, you'd be better off focusing on integrating the people from other cultures who are living in Ireland before you start going talking about integrating those who are living abroad. We will recognise the work done for Ireland or for Irish immigrants by people living abroad. As I've said, those particularly in the United Kingdom might take exception to the amount that's been done so far. But in fairness to point out, this is a strategy that's been laid out for the next couple of years. One would wonder, of course, why the sudden interest in people living abroad. We'll come to that in a moment. Women and girls are powerful agents of change in their communities, says the document, and helps promote gender equality and women's empowerment across our diaspora. We will promote Bridges Day. Oh, this should be of interest to us here in County Kildare, as an annual day of celebration of the talented and creativity of Irish women across many spheres of life. Well, I might throw in a little suggestion there straight away that they might turn the 1st of February into a national holiday then, for a start. We will support research to improve understanding of the role and contribution of women in the diaspora, and we will support the creation of women in business diaspora networks aimed at fostering peer mentoring. Well, indeed, we're finally joined by the Minister now, so we can I can stop my solo run on that. Minister for State for Overseas Development Aid and Diaspora, Colm Brophy. Good morning to you.
Well, first of all, good morning, Clem, can I say to you two things? Apologies, a little bit of confusion there was on the number and calling, because I was actually waiting for your call, listening to you, and I'd like to congratulate you on an absolutely wonderful job you did there on the diaspora strategy. I have to say, I think it was nearly better than what I do myself.
Well, I tell you, Colm, I'm used to being called from the bench into centre field, you know, with experience.
Well, fair to you, you played a blinder in centre field there, and you did a really, really good job on it. But I'd be delighted now if there's aspects of it, having had a great chance to read through it yourself, obviously, that you'd like to ask me about, because it is really a hugely important thing that we're doing here. We're changing, really, and advancing the way we do the whole diaspora strategy. So it's all about reaching out. It's all about engaging. But critically, for the future, it's all about opening up pathways for people as who are part of our diaspora to come back to Ireland and have a type of two-way structure where people wanting to return, that we do away with all the barriers that are there for those Irish people coming back. And like we've already had, we've had good success actually in Kildare for people that know type of able bodies down in Newbridge, or people who would know tribe talent down in Leixlip. Companies set up by Irish people, part of our diaspora for years, who came back to Ireland, availed of the Back to Ireland for Work scheme that we have, and were able to establish really good businesses which are now employing people in the county. And that's the type of thing we really want to build on over the next years, where we go out there and we say, look, yes, we value our diaspora when you're there, but if you want to come back, value you when you come back.
Indeed. Now, Global Ireland, Ireland's diaspora, in fairness, it is a strategy document 2020 to 2025, so we know the issues of the past, that those people abroad, the diaspora, would often say, oh, we're not valued, we're not appreciated, we're not integrated, we're not integral to what Ireland is doing and where it would go, and we have all this expertise, this, that, and the other. But you know, Colm, and I know we're not going to dwell on the past, we want to look forward in what is a very comprehensive report. I read it last night. So yeah. just as well I did.
You read it very well, I'll give you that.
I was able to head into it this morning. But you know that in the past we have tried to entice people home with financial rewards, with remuneration awards. It didn't really work for a multiplicity of reasons. I don't know why. People might have felt, look, the infrastructure is not there when we come back. On this programme yesterday morning, a local councillor, Aidan Farrelly, referred to a family he had been dealing with, who had come home from Australia, but they say they're going to head back to Australia because the opportunities are not just here.
Well, we look, everybody has different experiences if they come back, mm-hmm. if they decide to come back. For some people coming back, as I said to you, you know, for Leah Purcell, who started Able Bodies, or for James Alexander, who started the Tribe, they've had great experiences. For other people, friends of mine personally, actually, lived for 7 years outside the country, who have come back. They said they have come back, they've got jobs, they're working actually, some of them working on the front line in the HSE, doing an incredible job on helping us with the whole challenge of COVID over the last 12 months. They absolutely are delighted they came back to Ireland. Yes, of course, some people will come back, and for a variety of reasons, they might feel, did we do the right thing? But overwhelmingly, we found, particularly during the last 12, 14 months, that an awful lot of Irish people did want to come back, and we want to make sure that when they come back, they get the best experience. And the reason they wanted to come back was, unfortunately, because of the pandemic. Because, you know, when you leave a country sometimes and you go and particularly if you go to the United States, you go to the UK, you go to Europe, you type of felt, well, look, Ireland is only a hop, skip and a jump away if we really do want to go back. We can get there very quickly. With the way things changed and with the way the whole world stood on its head, we had an awful lot of Irish people who decided, do you know what, if there is going to be things like this happening in the world, I'd rather come back to the, let's call it the mothership, for want of a better description, and be based here in Ireland, closer to my family, closer to the support. And a lot of them have done that.
And Minister, could I, sorry for coming across and could I say in relation to that, Minister Brophy, that yes, lots of them want to come back, but can I mention a seven-letter word, hoping I've spelt it properly, housing. And I don't have to remind you the crisis we're in. These people might want to come back. The first thing they'll say, I can't afford to come back, with prices of accommodation in Dublin and further afield dearer than the likes of New York and Paris. When we come back, we can't get insurance for our cars. The infrastructure is not there. So in your report, which is a very well laid out document, I'll give you that, and is high on objectives and aims, all meritorious, it says Ireland will build mutually beneficial economic ties with the diaspora, but the success of what you're aiming to achieve over the next 5 years here must be underpinned by putting the infrastructure in place that will allow this diaspora to return.
Listen, absolutely right. Two things. On the mutually beneficial, what we're also talking about there, a very important aspect we shouldn't forget, is that when our diaspora who are not coming back to Ireland but want to live their lives overseas, by the way, and the diaspora includes people who aren't Irish, who are not Irish by birth, are even Irish citizens, but includes that whole range of people who have an affinity for Ireland, who might be second, third, fourth generation Irish Americans, who are chief executives of large corporations or who are running businesses in their own states or their own countries. So we want to build relationships with them so that they are ambassadors for Ireland.
All right, and all of that's very good. And my point being that the infrastructure... No, just let me say that...
Your point on the infrastructure, because you're absolutely right. Getting things like housing right, and that's why the government's house building programme is there. Getting things like access...
Minister, house building programme, don't get me started now, but go on, I'll let you finish.
No, listen, because I know for so many Irish people the frustration that they feel around trying to get a house. But you have to remember, we do actually have a really, really solid house building programme which will deliver housing for people. I am absolutely convinced of that. And if you look at the fact that even in terms of the last few years, in the last year, in the midst of a pandemic, we still built 20,000 houses in spite of the fact that construction had to be stopped for pandemic. And I think over the coming years, and remember, we're talking about a five-year plan in terms of the diaspora, we're going to see huge changes in terms, I believe, of house availability. We're going to see real changes much quicker than the next 5 years in terms of things like insurance costs. And we're going to see things that in terms of how Ireland will and is an attractive thing. Because one of the things in my job that I get, which is a great privilege, is to talk to the diaspora almost every single day. And they are so much more positive about Ireland than I think some Irish people are when they're talking about Ireland, when they're living here.
Okay.
Because they experience firsthand some of the horrendous problems of living in cities that can be...
All right, we have dealt in depth with the housing controversy and the housing crisis on this programme over the last couple of days, so for the benefit of listeners, I won't rehash all the situation or counter the statistics you're offering there. I want to focus finally, because we're running a bit out of time, having started that little bit late. In Chapter 5, I think it is, of the report, you speak about an implementation strategy. We'll allocate resources for initiatives that aim to support women's empowerment and youth engagement. We'll introduce multi-annual funding. We'll apply a gender, youth and diversity tens to ESP applications. We'll encourage joint applications from organisations to foster greater cooperation and engagement. We'll promote activities designed to strengthen governance. We'll encourage the sharing of best practice in attractive engagements. Now, all of that is lovely, high principled, everything else, but let's talk shillings and pence, or euros and cents in terms of that. What precisely are you going to do to allow and enable that to happen?
Well, you see, our ESP funding is at the heart of that, right?
So as we speak, we have organisations making their case for funding. So what we have done, we've done this for years, we spend millions and millions every year funding Irish diaspora organisations right around the world. So what we've said to them for this year and going forward is that if you want to be a partner with us in that spending of all those millions of money, then you need to make your case based on those criteria. So you need to be looking as a diaspora community organisation, whether you're in London or whether you're in New York or whether you're in the United Arab Emirates or in Brisbane or Melbourne, you need to be looking, how am I going to be more inclusive? How am I going to reach out? How am I going to support women in education, women in business? How am I going to reach out to communities that have been traditionally more marginalised, who are part of the Irish diaspora but haven't been? And come back to us with your proposals, and we will work with you in developing those proposals and putting real money. Because the way the diaspora funding works primarily for people who might have come across this stuff in the past is we put our funding in place, and then the organisations put effectively, in some instances, matching funding, where they leverage the money we give them. And historically, that has supplied an incredible range of programs, particularly, say, in the last 12 months, where an awful lot of that money went in to support services for and Irish communities affected by COVID.
Okay, and finally, Minister, all the principles outlined in the document are laudable indeed, and nobody will argue with them. But I just give you, for one final comment, if you would, please, I give you the three biggest obstacles that you are facing to implementing that report in terms of the inward aspects of it as regards to just investing in the Irish abroad. Housing, childcare, insurance to try and drive in this country. They're the three most common obstacles that are cited by anyone who would love to return to this island and contribute to our economic development.
Absolutely, and that is why when I launched the strategy document, that the first thing I said was that we're going to put what's known as a whole-of-government approach. So rather than just saying this is the job of the Department of Foreign Affairs, Colin Brophy as Minister for Diaspora, I said no, this is the job of every part of government. So I chair a cross-department committee which includes the departments responsible for housing, for the whole areas of transport, the whole areas of insurance, all those areas and all parts of government. And collectively, we want to look at solving those problems so as that when people want to come back. And by the way, a great number of people do come back every year. I mean, one of the great strengths of our diaspora is that in-out element of people wanting to come back.
And many of them find, look, the obstacles I've mentioned just don't make it amenable or feasible for them to stay here, and they head off again.
No, but sorry, Clem, but that's just not true. I mean, you know, you can throw out a line, but you have to have lots of people come back who love Ireland, who are proud being Irish, and when they come back, they make a real go of their life in Ireland, and they're delighted to have had the chance.
All right, Minister.
And we want to support them. Listen, thanks very much.
Not at all. The document is called Global Ireland, Ireland's Diaspora Strategy 20 to 2025. You can read the whole document on the Department of Foreign Affairs website, dfa.ie. Meanwhile, Minister for Overseas Development, Data and Diaspora, Colm Brophy, thank you indeed for joining us, Minister. This morning. Okay, there we have. Anyway, so at least I didn't have to do the solo run for the whole of the document. Up next, Forsa R say that industrial action is inevitable if the 3,500 local authorities staff, including here in County Kildare, are moved to Irish Water.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, I'll get to some of your messages in a moment because we're running a little behind due to the delay in the Minister, which in fairness to point out to the Minister wasn't his fault, but apparently his parliamentary assistant, our PR company, gave us the wrong numbers and Owen had to go on a tour of various numbers before the Minister took the initiative himself and rang in, so fair play. Forsa, the trade union, says industrial action over the proposed transfer of 3,500 local authority staff to Irish Water is almost inevitable. The National Secretary of the Forsa trade union is Peter Nolan. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Tom.
Thank you for joining us. This dispute has been going on for quite a while now, Peter. I believe that, for example, it was aired in the Labour Court last year and the court ordered your union to present what it called a business case to support your claim. What particular claim have you?
Are we on, maybe you're talking about the union's concerns in relation to job evaluation, Clem. We might be mixed messages.
All right, possibly I am. Right, okay. Let's deal with then the proposed transfer of 3,500 staff to Irish Water. Yep. What's the problem?
Sure, well, you're right in terms of your intro to the last piece as well, because this has been going on for an even longer period of time. You know that in 2012 the government took a decision to set up Irish Water to run the delivery of water services. They, at that stage, we argued that this should continue to operate under local authority staff, and we were successful in ensuring that the operation of services to the people of Kildare would continue to be run by the people who have the expertise and local knowledge for that service. About 4 years ago, I think about 2017, Irish Water announced a plan that they wanted to take complete control of the staff of local authorities. It's about 3,500 people, as you say, in your intro piece. We've had engagements with the previous minister, we've had engagements with this minister, and we've set out four positions at which we need confirmation on before that can happen. And can I say these are not just issues that are, I think, relevant to our members. Our members are very, very anxious. We met yesterday in conference, and the representatives of those 10,000 workers showed extreme anxiety about their future. But I think the public should be concerned as well, because we think this is a plan that's fraught with danger. If I have time, I'll just explain.
Oh, you have time, and I was just about to take you up on that last particular couple of words, fraught with danger. Why so?
Sure. Well, there's a couple of things. Just the service delivery piece, that our people are the experts with local knowledge in relation to the running of water services. Many of your listeners probably kind of just turn on the tap and, you know, expect to see the water supplied. They probably wouldn't, and understandably so, wouldn't be privy of the requirements in terms of filtration, in terms of ensuring the purity of the supply. And the same is true in the reverse direction for the wastewater supply. So it's not something that just comes to you, you know, when you turn the tap on. So that takes experts, all types of experts, administrative staff, engineering staff, technical staff, scientific staff, to ensure that we can rely on a daily basis.
And isn't that precisely the point, Peter? Sorry for cutting you across your thought now, so hold your thought on the other points you were going to make. Isn't that precisely the very good reason why Irish Water, who are the experts in doing this, would be the ones who would preside over the workforce?
That's exactly it, Clem, and you've hit the nail on the head, because I've been meeting with these staff up and down the country in Kildare and with members in the Kildare branch, and quite simply, people say they signed up for a contract of employment with Kildare County Council, and they have no desire whatsoever to transfer their employment to Irish Water. Irish Water has a distant system of pay negotiations, they have a distant system of discussions with trade unions, and they have a different arrangement in relation to the way in which the service is operated and delivered. And our people signed up looking to develop their position within Kildare County Council, with aspirations of moving into other sections of the council. So I think people's aspirations have to be respected in that regard. And if people are saying absolutely clearly that they don't want to go, we'll still engage in discussions in relation to it, but it would have to be based in relation to circumstances where either Irish Water were in a position to persuade people. Now, I wish them well in that, but I have to say there is such such an anxiety about the change that our people, quite frankly, are saying to me that to be quite frank, the pressure is on. People at our conference yesterday, people questioned why the union was not engaging in more forthright action in relation to.
And is there an element, for example, fears, despite the government's assertions all along that Irish Water will never be privatised, is there an element of fear among workers that while working for local authorities, they are, if you like, in the state sector, but that ultimately transferring to Irish Water might result down the line, possibly, despite government assurances that this will not happen, that the company would be privatised and that their terms and conditions of work would change?
That's absolutely the case, and I think it's a justified fear I mean, just if I, again, you've assured me of a bit of time, so I can take you through that journey.
Yes.
We put it as a demand that there be a constitutional referendum to protect water services and public control. And we persuaded the last government of that case after a long discussion in the all-party Oireachtas committee. The government committed to it. And they gave us a written assurance that there would be, they would move to have a referendum in the first part of July 2020. Now, we do know that COVID and the elections and the formation of government may have delayed that. But the first act of the new government was to say they were going to refer the constitutional referendum back to an all-party committee of the Oireachtas. And we believe that that doesn't give us the necessary comfort that we believe there's a serious intent to provide. So that, I think, justifies the fear you speak of, Clem.
Now, we have an interim, if you like, or a holding operation in one sense at the moment where local authorities currently provide water services to Irish Water. That agreement is set to run until 2025. But have the government given indications that they would like to scrap that?
Oh, they have. They've said that they want this new arrangement in place next year. They said they wanted the negotiations completed by July, and I've already said publicly and repeated yesterday that that's a wildly optimistic target. This is one of the biggest proposed transformations of the public service that would have taken place in the history of the state. It's massive, involving 3,500 people. We'll engage, we'll commit to engagement with the parties. It's a complex set of engagements because it involves the chief executives of the local authority, the chief executives of Irish Water, the minister and his department, and the trade unions. So it's a very complex set of negotiations. In addition to the constitutional referendum, we have a huge piece of work in relation to what's the impact on local authorities if this was to go ahead. Kildare County Council will lose anything up to 30% of its funding if this proposal goes ahead. That affects all the citizens of Kildare, not just people in terms of the water services, because it's the swathes of the sections of the council that will be affected.
And without preempting anything or giving hostages to fortune, is industrial action almost inevitable, to use the words that were quoted? Is it almost inevitable if you don't get a satisfactory resolution?
I think it is, and I think the single biggest stumbling block we have, what we would say are mixed words about what has become known in local parlance now as whether there would be compulsory conscription of staff to Irish Water, because quite frankly people are not keen on the move. The Minister said he wants to conduct an agreement with us, that we feel that's quite positive, but that agreement must ensure that nobody is forced against their will to transfer to Irish Water. That's a litmus test for us. Now, we've got some assurances on that, but quite frankly, they're not enough. Right. And every time we look for, I suppose, the gold standard assurance, we fall short. So I don't believe there will be industrial action in the immediate future, but I think the gap between the parties is so great that it will be very hard to avoid. And I think, you know, in the current kind of COVID situation, that's something we should all strive to avoid. I said at my conference yesterday that if we're forced to take action and we're successful, then, you know, it will prove that industrial action was not necessary. If, on the other hand, we were to get into the industrial action, and I've yet to be unsuccessful in one, but if it was the case that it was unsuccessful, that would see, I think, the death knell of Irish Water if it conscripts 3,500 people who don't want to work there. I think even the Irish Water Management understands that.
We'll, on that particular note, we'll keep a close watching brief on this because of its impact in every county and here, including here in Kildare. Meanwhile, National Secretary of the Forestry Trade Union holding their conference yesterday where is a major issue. Peter Nolan, thanks for your time, Peter.
Thanks, Dan.
And indeed, we'll engage on that again.